So in order to understand this, I'm now going to talk about something which first of all comes from the Bhagavad Gita, which has to do with what are called five fluctuations. So let's talk about these fluctuations for a moment. Each of us has a perception. Each of us has a vision, a perception, a way of thinking about something we call ourselves. We each think about ourselves. I want to point out or state to you now that what you're thinking of yourself, however you're thinking of yourself, whatever you think of yourself, however great or small you think of yourself, that it is an ego trip, an illusion. It ain't real. But it's a very powerful illusion, and we want to see how we can see it better, this illusion. We want to see if we can catch it by the corner, so to speak. And what we're going to be looking at is what I call five fluctuations or movements of something that exists beyond the confines of space and time, something which is actually the mind without the ego, this floating mind I talked about in session one. This movement which enables this illusion is actually that which creates a coexistence or a merger of what we call ego and the world, or the in here and the out there. In here, anything that the ego contains. Out there, anything outside of my control, so to speak. And these fluctuations, these five fluctuations, are really stabilization factors or stabilizers which establish and maintain themselves. I'm always amused when I get on an airplane and the airline attendants are always asked before the flight takes off to arm the doors. What they mean by that is that, I don't know, I always think, oh my God, they're putting guns in the doors? What do you mean they arm the doors? What does that mean? It turns out they're arming the doors so the doors won't just fly open spontaneously. So arming has something to do with protection. What I want to teach here, what I want to bring to your attention here, is how to disarm these five fluctuations so we can open the door to our spacecraft, our ego, and learn how to see through the door into something we call the true self. If you need a metaphorical story, think of the famous story of the emperor's new clothes. Remember the kid? The emperor is kind of a character, and he wants to make sure that everybody appreciates him and loves him, and so he wants the finest of clothing and the finest of the weavers and the tailors and whatever. And every time a new thing gets made for him, he says, no, it's not good enough. No, it's not good enough. And finally, a tailor comes in and says, I've got the finest material. It's so fine. You can barely feel it. It's just amazing. Here, feel the texture of this material. I'm showing it to you now. It's very fine. You can barely see it, can't you? See how fine it is? And of course, the emperor, being a little bit of a fool, doesn't know the difference between having a joke played on him or really, is this a real fabric? I mean, you know, if somebody told you, a famous tailor, that he had something very famous, you might believe him. So the emperor tries on this new garment and wears it. And in his mind, he sees himself wearing the most gorgeous thing he can imagine. Actually, he's stark naked, but he doesn't know that. So now he goes walking through the streets, and everybody is so afraid of the emperor that they bow down and say, oh, the emperor's new clothes, how wonderful they all are. They're so fantastic. But one little kid says, what are you talking about? The emperor's naked. And therein lies the story. You see, we want to get to the nakedness of the emperor of our ego. So let's talk about these five fluctuations. The first fluctuation is probably the most difficult to see through because it's so downright compelling, particularly to us in the Western way of life. It's termed, and this is going to grab ya, it's called valid knowledge. It's the kind of knowledge that comes through the perception of all of the sensory inputs that we have. And as a result of these sensory inputs, how we've learned to behave accordingly. So this is very valid knowledge. I know that when I step on a tack, it's going to hurt, so I don't go walking on tacks. That's very valid knowledge. I know that when a light turns red, I stop and wait until it turns green. That's very valid knowledge. So reasoning and thinking things through is prominent in this first fluctuation, this first movement. Logical construction, book learning, classes you take in school, all that stuff impresses and strengthens this fluctuation, this movement, so that most of us would feel quite naked without our logical minds to hold on to. Well, of course you don't cross against the red light. Well, of course you don't go walking on tacks, etc. So we'll get to that. We're going to come to that. The second fluctuation or the second movement could be called parity or invalid knowledge. What this consists of are the opinions and beliefs we all carry that are not established by valid knowledge. That is the first fluctuation. And herein lie a number of culprits, such as prejudice, hatred, but also romance and fantasy. It's probably why we watch television dramas. Many of us wouldn't mind getting rid of hatreds and prejudices, but our love and our romance novels? Oh my God, I don't want to get, I love them. I'm addicted to them. The third fluctuation is actually related to the second, and it consists of, this is going to grab some of you because you do this a lot. I know you do. Words without meaning or substance. How many of you say things that don't have any meaning just because you like to hear yourself talk? I know a lot of us do that, don't we? Yes. Such as exaggerations. Yes, there were many overblown opinions, even in the days of Patanjali when he came up with these ideas. And in today's world, oh my God, I mean, talk about politicians. I mean, have you ever heard a politician say something that really had meaning or substance? They don't talk in words of meaning or substance because if they did, they'd be committed to something. And my God, who would we vote for then? So in today's world, there appears to be a tremendous amount of that. And there appears no lack of fantastic claims and over-the-top snake oil advertisements and salesmen. I mean, my goodness, where would we be without them? Now, the fourth movement might not seem to be an obstacle to achieving time travel or realizing the ego state, but it is. This is the state of sleep without dreaming, dreamless sleep, the big blackness. It seems to be very close to what we might think is the supreme state of no ego, but it isn't. It's not there yet. It really is another fluctuation or movement which is kind of required in order for us to have the continuing illusion or continuing notion of the in here and out there that we call the separation between the ego mind and that which is not the ego mind. What does it do, this state of dreamless sleep? Well, when we're in it, we probably don't have any idea what's going on. It's kind of like when you take a anesthesia or something like that, and you're just out, and next thing you know, you're up and you're awake, and what happened? You just had an operation. Last thing I remember is going to sleep, and next thing I remember is being awake. So maybe people are afraid of that because it's so much a part of our mindset that there is such a thing. In fact, many cultures talk about this state as being the one that they may desire. Some people think that's what nirvana is, or that's the final state of being, to be nothing. Well, it doesn't quite appeal to me. Maybe it appeals to you, but it doesn't. It's just another one of the, let's say, leitmotifs of the rhythms of these fluctuations of these movements. Okay, so let's now talk about the fifth fluctuation. This one is probably the hardest to deal with in practice because it is the memory of all your perceptions, imaginations, thoughts, objects, your senses, and your interaction with others. The thing of it is that memories keep going. They last because we have made an effort to hang on to them. A long time ago, even as a kid, I realized that I could not memorize anything unless it had some emotional effect on me. This is very nice when you're trying to remember your first kiss or that funny joke your uncle once told you, but it has a downside. Once you do have a memory, once it's in there, and it's one that you refer back to because there's a kick associated with it, it remains persistently fixed in your mind. Even if you think you can't remember it, it's still there. It lurks there, maybe in your unconscious, ready to jump out at you the first chance it gets, and something will recall it. It doesn't take much to recall a hidden memory unless it's one that's so deep that it decides to keep hidden from you. A dream will make it come out, as will meeting someone who reminds you of someone you met a long time ago. You can think of all these fluctuations, all of these five fluctuations or movements, as barriers, like arming the door of the airplane. They're impedances. They're placed in your way. They plant you firmly on Earth in ordinary space and time, and they act as traditional anchors. And with them well in place, get this, time travel is virtually impossible using your mind. It may be that it's impossible even using a machine, as we're going to get to later on when we talk about the physical aspects of time travel. Now, many different spiritual disciplines offer ways to go beyond these barriers. Yoga is one school that does it. They define the goal as realization of the true self, which is beyond these fluctuations that keep the illusorial self alive and well.